From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
All right, time for some relief from the doldrum of everyday life. And as I was wandering around the office today dealing with some interdepartmental office politics, I found myself thinking, I am sick and tired of all these point-scoring in the office. And then it was Leon, of course, who pointed out that isn't the whole point of playing board games to be a point scorer.
Score points, yeah.
Right, right. Which sent me into just an existentialist tailspin, because I'm like, oh my God, is that why I'm such a bad gamer? Because I don't like scoring points. Or is the reason that I'm a half-decent gamer is because I can't score points in this other situation where socially awkward people, just socially awkward people who fail in office politics, get driven into board games in order to score points. Is that the answer?
Well, clearly not, because Garth and I are excellent at both office politics and board games.
Yes, I agree. I agree 100% wholeheartedly.
I am in the company of gods. And so are you on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. This is another week of The Dice Men Cometh. My name's Trent.
I'm Garth.
And I'm Mark, and it's episode 127 on the 28th of July. And Garth, what is coming up this week?
Oh my God, it is a party here, because unlike regular weeks, we are actually going to talk about not one, not two, but three games, all of which are guaranteed to get a party started or finished. So that's good. We are also going to have an interview from one of Australia's premier board game artists.
Oh, yeah.
Now, we have had numerous designers that we've interviewed over the years that we've been doing this, but I can't recall the time we've had an actual board game artist on, so that's going to be quite exciting. We are going to talk about a modern Netflix and board game mashup that Trent is a little bit addicted to.
Oh, my God.
And then, gentlemen, we might have to tease the launch of a comic.
A competition!
You can win stuff from the Dice Men on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Land the methamphetamine blues, Mark Lanigan. Dice Men Cometh on Edge.
So edgy.
Radio 99.3 FM. Coming up in the show, a talk with graphic designer and illustrator Ian O'Toole from Perth, Australia, and a man who spends, well, he's a freelance graphic artist. He spends about 50% of his workload working on board games from all over the world.
Wow, that's amazing.
And he works a lot with designer Vital Lacerda,
yeah,
who's produced some fantastic games. We talk about those.
And he really came to our attention with The Gallerist, yeah, didn't we, which is a beautiful looking game.
Well, I asked Ian O'Toole about that, so you can hear that. That's coming up. I think it's a good one for anyone who's interested in the industry of board games, such as it is.
Did you ask him how to score just two more points? Because that's what you need to beat me.
He's a... Don't you remind me. Okay, he's an artist, not a designer.
Yeah, of course.
A lover, not a fighter. But look, before that, we're going to talk about what we've been playing lately, and nothing gets a party rocking harder than the guy who whips out a box and says, "Let's play a board game, guys."
And look, that guy is good friend of the show, Eos. Hope you well, Eos, because at BorderCon, we were sort of hanging around at a bit of a loose end on Monday lunchtime-ish, thinking, we can't really sit down and play a full-on game because we're getting ready to go, but we need to do something. Eos! And Eos came to the party. In fact, he brought the party with three games. We're going to talk about them, and they're quick little games, so we're going to have a quick little talk. So the first one is called Team Play. Says it all right there. It was designed in 2015 by Johannes Schmidauer Koenig, published by Schmidt Spieler. And it's a rummy style game where you're supporting your partner. You're playing in pairs by passing cards to each other to complete goals. Well, you've got to keep an eye on your opponent and look at the cards that are coming up. So each turn you're drawing cards, meeting common goals, which are on other cards in the middle of the table, and then individual goals. And you're able to, you draw a card, you're able to pass cards to your partner so they can complete their goals, you can complete your goals, and those are team goals. But it is, you can play in teams of two teams of two or three teams of two, and it's a lot of fun. It plays really quickly. It's very simple. So your cards have basically got numbers from, I think it was 1 to 8.
Yep.
And they're in different colours. So you've got blue cards and red cards. So you're making runs, you're making straights, you're making pairs, three of a coins, those sort of things. So I said that sort of rummy playing card type game.
Well, but is this anything you couldn't play with a regular set of cards?
Yes, because yeah, the cards are all numbered 1 to 8.
Yeah. And only two colours.
Yeah, two colours and, yeah, you're creating colour combinations. Yeah. But the joy of this game is the fact that you are working in a team and you are allowed as part of your turn to pass cards between each other, which makes it quite a bonding experience, I guess, because you're not just working solely on your little mini goal. You're trying to get what's best for your other player because you can see what they're going for. Plus, there is the collective shared goal that the first team to succeed in that gets some extra points. So
and
it's good
you
fun.
I guess you don't know what cards your partner has in their hand, therefore how close they might be to completing a goal.
Are you allowed to communicate?
Not
you're not allowed
really
to say, I would like a red 7, thank you.
One of those tricky ones where you're not supposed to table talk, but as long as you don't talk about specific cards, there's a bit of leeway there.
What's it called again?
It's called Team Play.
Sounds naff. Next.
Ouch. Right, okay.
All right. Sounds like Trent hasn't been to Monday afternoon at a BorderCon for a while because it was actually the right kind of game. Now, should we go on to another one that we talked about?
Garth, I got this party started. Now you can party on, Garth.
Wow. That's the first person who's ever said that to me. So we are talking about a game that will actually get everyone's heart started and pumping and excitement because this is Dr. Panic. Now, people who are into this whole kind of thing would have probably seen Shut Up and Sit Down do a little video review of Dr. Panic, but there is surprisingly little content on it in terms of Board Game Geek. There are three written reviews on this game.
Yeah.
So, Dr. Panic, you are playing somewhere between 2 and 9 players, team play again, up to 3 in a team, where this game is made up of 8 mini-games, and the good thing is a game goes for 12 minutes exactly because the best way to play this game is to download the free companion app, which will keep the time going, and it will also make the little interruptions that you will get a bit more visceral audio, a bit more exciting. So there's 8 mini-games that you will be doing. Each team of 3 will have a department head who will essentially be leading the other 2 workers. Now, you're going to have first test will be the suture test. Now, the department has a little sign, and there is a little cardboard bit of cardboard thing that has holes all through it that are color-coded. So there's yellow holes and blue holes and purple holes. One of the other players has to hold a needle that has a string, and the other player has to hold some tweezers, and you have to put the needle through the hole, and the other person has to get the tweezers out, and you have to do it as quickly as possible.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know whether people picked up. The name of the game is Dr. Panic. Because this is a medical theme.
Yes.
And without stealing your thunder, Garth, in my mind, the best part of this game is you get to wear a green hairnet.
Yes.
They come in the game because effectively you're all like surgeons, basically. That's
no,
why it's
surgeons
Dr.
go to university a lot longer. You are the underling doing what the surgeon and then the doctor head. Because the thing is, even though there's up to 9 players, this is a co-op. You are fighting against the game. The way it works is that you're not trying to be the best team of 3. You need to. Well, so the only way you can move on to the next little mini game is once that mini game becomes available from the other team. Mm. So you're trying to get all the teams through as quickly as possible. So you've done the sutra. There might be the scanning where there's this little cardboard magnifying glass where the department head will say, right elbow, left knee, and you've got to put it on the right spot. You might have to do an x-ray where I might say to you, Trent, you've got to stick your left arm out at 90 degrees, and then you've got to turn your head to the right.
Are there x-ray specs that come with this game?
There should be. You've then got pills where you've got to put the right combination of colour pills on the right time of the day, on the right day of the week to make sure that you get past.
And to make it clear, you're not required to actually take the pills as a part of this game.
It's an optional variant, which is generally after dark. You've then got to create a right kind of medicine. So you've got a sort of a needle end and start, and then you've got a whole combination of potential drugs that you've got to put into the needle based on a patient's height and weight and blood type and what have you. It's a lot easier than it sounds. But then, and this is where the joy of the app comes in, sometime during it, the patient will go into cardiac arrest.
Oh, yes, this is brilliant.
And this is where the table is guaranteed to just pause and burst out into laughter. Because
be in stitches.
Hey, because part of this is it'll go into cardiac arrest. One of the mini games starts off with you've got to get the right combination of numbers to be able to start the defibrillator. But the other thing is you have to have a person constantly pushing down on a whoopee cushion, which is the heartbeat of the patient going for as long as it takes to get the defibrillator to start. You then push the button. It goes 1, 2, 3, bang, and hopefully the patient is alive.
Okay. This sounds a lot more interesting than teamwork.
Yeah, look, team play. Look, in terms of a game to get the party started, this is the number one out of the three that we're talking about, in my humble opinion, because it gets everyone up and out of their seats. They're running around the table. You need a big table to do this. It is hilarious. I don't think I would play it very often, and I wouldn't buy it because it's just not the game that I will sit down and go, hey, guys, let's go and play this game. But in terms of a party starter, it is fantastic.
Although it does sound a little bit challenging for Nana or for introverts.
Yeah, anyone who's had a hip replacement, probably not ideal. But also, and this is where it's a little bit iffy, I think it might also be a bit too tricky for the younger person.
Okay.
Now, it does say that it is for ages 7+, but I don't know. I reckon a little bit older, because some of these, you know, like you've got to do the CAT scan, for example, which requires you to balance two cards
meow,
and then slide something through that the patient. Took me about a minute to do that, let alone a 7-year-old kid.
Look, if people want to check this out, go to our Instagram account, Dice Men Cometh, because we have a small video there of us at Bordercom playing this, and you can see it in action.
You can see exactly how long it took me to create that CAT scan.
And our third party game that we've been playing lately, Mark?
Yeah, this one is called Wonky by USAopoly. It's a dexterity game, and you're basically, you've got cards. Cards have pictures of cubes. There are small cubes, medium cubes, and large
They're not
cubes.
They're not cubes.
I'll come to that. And there are three colours of cubes, I think green, blue and purple.
They're not
but
cubes.
They're not really cubes, as Garth says.
This says 2 to 99 players, 15 minutes. How the hell does that work?
Yeah, I don't know about 99 players, but they're not really cubes. They look like cubes that have been made really poorly in someone's backyard. There were basically two of the faces of the cube meet in a wonky fashion. So you're trying to stack these cubes, but they've got two wonky faces, and it's really tricky. And each time you play a card, which tells you to do a thing, to lay a particular color or size of cube. If you can do that, you can discard your card. First person to get rid of their cards wins. There's some other, like the Uno pick up four cards that are in there. But it's basically just stacking cubes in a funny way where the cubes won't stack.
That's all. But I love the fact that we played these on the Monday. That's it. We played these on the Monday afternoon after having spent a weekend playing Seven-hour Archipelago,
Falling Sky
for 5 hours. Some pretty brain-burny games to have a Monday afternoon that was light and fun. It was a perfect way to end a con.
And I will point out on aforementioned Instagram account, Dice Men Cometh, you can also see a video of Leon failing to stack wonky cubes.
This sounds a little like TikTok Woodman or
The same sort of level, exactly, okay. Right, where it's good fun, easy to play. You could play this one with your Nana.
All right.
But look, we had a ball playing these games. Yeah. Aos, you know, it's perfect. Like, oh, we need a quick game for this. Bang, you know, he's just pulling them out of his back pocket. Perfect fit and time and complexity of games for the time we were looking for. So congrats to Aos.
Yes, and hello Aos, and hello to all our gamer friends in
Townsville?
North Queensland.
North Queensland.
Townsville, Cairns, North of Queensland.
Hobart. Yeah, that place that always wants to secede from the rest of Australia. And you know what? You're welcome to it. It's a Dice Men Cometh on Itch Radio 99.3 FM. Trent, Mark and Garth. And
we might come back and listen to Ian O'Toole.
We'll do the interview next. That's coming up in just a moment.
That was the Mighty Boys Adapto Dreaming on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh. Did I ever tell you guys I went to a wedding in Dapto?
Where's Dapto?
So Dapto's just south of Wollongong. Yeah. There's a famous greyhound racing track there.
Dapto dogs.
Dapto doggies.
Not anymore.
There you go, of course. And the wedding I went to, would you believe it or not, very Dapto, because the bride and groom, they rode their horse-drawn carriage through the McDonald's drive-thru on their way to the reception.
I'd believe that.
And needless to say, that wedding didn't last. Anyway, now we're going to hear from Trent and his new best friend all the way over in Perth, Ian O'Toole.
From Perth to tables around the world, Ian O'Toole is helping board gamers to understand just what the hell is going on a whole bunch of beautiful, beautiful games, which we're going to talk about. Ian, hello.
Hey, Trent, how are you?
Yeah, well, mate. We know your work from Alien Frontiers, Study in Emerald, Stockpile, The Gallerist, Vinhos. It's great work, mate. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
You've had over 10 years of work in graphic design and illustration. You're mm-hmm. hardly an overnight success, and you've been working in board games for quite a few years now. But I see, I've had a little squiz at your website. You've done a lot of other work. Exhibition stalls for trade fairs and stuff. You've worked in the energy industry, I saw, for quite a bit. Mm, yep. And then there's this corner of your website where you're just drawing pictures of dragons flat out.
Yeah, that's right.
So how did that work for years? Ian, were you were obviously paying the bills during the day and then just drawing pictures of monsters at night.
Yeah, pretty much. It's a strange marriage, all right? I mean, essentially I've always been an illustrator. First and foremost, but it's really hard to find a steady job as an illustrator. So I learned graphic design at uni, and worked in basically any industry I could find within graphic design, so advertising, marketing, anything like that. All the while, I was continuing to draw silly pictures of dragons. when I started to It was pretty much when I decided to work for myself, which was about 4 years ago. And I was looking for basically, new markets to advertise my work to. And I was playing a lot of games at that point, and I just figured I'd have a go. I figured it'd be fun more than anything to, take on a few sort of hobby projects. But I soon discovered there's a lot of people who want, illustration and design for board games. So that's good.
So is this your dream job at this point, to spend many, many lonely hours drawing pictures of dragons and bizarre little abstract symbols on things?
That's quite an accurate description, yeah. it's really enjoyable. Yeah, I really like it. I mean, dream job, I don't know. But I've done far worse jobs, let's put it that way. It hasn't spoiled my hobby so far.
Oh, good, because that was a question. Do you still get time to play? I know you're a member of WABA in Perth.
Right.
You still get along to those meetings?
Yeah. I'm an acting committee member at the moment.
Oh, you poor devil.
Yeah, that's right. it's not too bad. I try as much as possible, and I have a very understanding wife who lets me out once every 2 weeks, sometimes more.
Ian, The Gallerist is a masterpiece of design and illustration. Congratulations on it. It's a wonderful, wonderful game.
Thank you very much.
It's a game with many moving parts that somehow seem to come together very simply, and I think a lot of that is down to your design. Can you take us inside that black art? How do you approach something like that? Vital Lacerda is not known for his simple games.
No. Well, I mean, first of all, Vital sent me his prototype. And Vital is actually, you may not know this, but he's actually a graphic designer himself.
Oh, I didn't, right.
So his prototypes tend to look pretty decent and tend to be pretty clear. That's a blessing. The prototype was in pretty good shape when I got it. He sent me the files. I printed it all out. I got some understanding friends around to play it with me while I furiously sent messages to Vital to clear up rules and things like that. And from that point of, from that point forward, I mean, the Gallerist is really a graphic design piece. It's not really an illustration piece. There's a, there's an illustration in the background to give context to everything, but it's really an exercise in visual communication and graphic design. So
you've done all the art in the game though as well, haven't you?
Do you mean the pieces of art?
Sure.
No, I didn't do all of them. I did some. I filled in the gaps. So Vital actually kind of put a call out on Board Game Geek to artists to submit artwork for that game. I think I ended up doing, I don't know, 10, maybe 15 pieces of artwork for it, as well as all the sculptures.
Vital now calls you his muse.
Does he really?
And I assume that's flattering. I don't really.
I don't know.
I'm imagining you in white chiffon.
Oh, thank you.
And of course, Nemo's War is a Kickstarter from earlier this year that absolutely smashed it. Can you describe working on a Kickstarter game and whether or not it's any different? Because in my head, it's kind of all ass backwards because the game sells before it's finished. Mm-hmm. And I mean, really, Kickstarters live or die by their art as well. So that's got to be a lot of pressure on you.
It depends how the Kickstarter is put together. I mean, a lot of Kickstarters are complete games when they go onto Kickstarter, and they're just looking for seed capital or production capital or whatever. So often I am, my job is done by the time the game hits Kickstarter.
Okay.
That's not always the case. Sometimes there will be a pre-Kickstarter budget, which will cover, a certain amount of design and illustration. And then, following hopefully successful funding, there will be another budget, which will be completion of the game. I mean, the Gallerist, for instance, I didn't actually know was going to be a Kickstarter game. Same with Nemo's War. So from my point of view, it doesn't really change a whole lot. It may stagger the workflow.
Okay. You're dealing direct with designers, or designers are contacting you looking for your services, yeah?
Yes, or publishers, yeah.
I imagine that large parts of the industry, it must be a little bit like dealing in the Wild West. There's got to be a lot of designers who have reputations for not knowing what the hell they're doing or ripping people off. You've got to go in with your eyes wide open, yeah?
Yes, definitely. I mean, luckily, I mean, I don't know about reputations, to be honest, but luckily it's...
And I'm not asking you to name any names, man. I just don't know that there's necessarily a lot of rules for the way the industry works, ironically.
No, there aren't. Yeah, that is ironic, actually. It's usually... The thing that I find is it's usually pretty evident by the way in which you're approached, how serious and how professional the potential client is.
Mm.
And in the sort of early stages, I've become pretty good, and through my other work in other industries, in kind of probing with telling questions at the start,
just to see
if they're actually taking it seriously. And in general, I don't work in any games that aren't complete from a design perspective, because I don't know what I'm quoting on. Now, having said that, Lisboa is still in development, so that's not entirely true.
But you had a degree of confidence going into that one.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I mean, the Gallerist was pretty complete when I started it. It did evolve as I was, as the art was evolving. But even then, a little bit. And Lisboa is pretty solid now. I think he's going to stop tinkering with it pretty soon. I hope.
I imagine that you see a lot of very bad design in board games nowadays as well.
Yes.
And I am going to ask you to name some titles.
Oh, God. No, I can't. I mean, it's... I really
No, you, no, I understand. I understand.
Having said that, I mean, it's not actually that bad across the board. It's, the graphic design used in games is these days is actually of a pretty high standard, as is the illustration work. I think where it falls down a little bit sometimes is in the role of art direction, which I don't think has really become a thing in the board game industry.
Can you explain what that means to us, please?
Yeah, so an art director is somebody who has a cohesive vision of what the end product should look like. Mm. And they have the skills to either create that or talk to the people and get them to create what they want. Often with games, we're still looking at somebody does the illustration for the cover, for instance, and then somebody does the logo and they put it on top.
Right.
And you see this in the larger companies. I mean, you see it in the Asmodees. I mean, I don't know for sure, but I would imagine they have an art director. And I know Fantasy Flight certainly do.
So I was wondering if you could maybe settle an argument that we're having here on the Dice Men at the moment over the current hotness Scythe. Have you played this yourself?
I have. I've played it twice.
Now, it's an amazing looking game. My guess is, I mean, I've only played it once myself. My guess is that it is fairly well designed as far as, you know, simplicity of layout and ease to learn. But it does strike me as being a bit of a bloated, overblown mess. and that there's really not very much there. Now, what's your perspective on this game from a graphic designer and illustrator's point of view? Because it does look gorgeous.
I mean, that's a good example of a game that definitely has a unifying visual look to it. Yeah, very striking appearance. So are you asking me about the game itself?
Well, a little from column A, a little from column B, because I think the graphic design and the success thereof does go straight to the gameplay.
Yes. Well, in order for the player to quickly understand how their player board works, which is their little control panel, you know, how they actually interact with what's on the board and play the game, that's a graphic design exercise. You know, that has to be clear.
Yeah.
So they've done things like, you know, anything marked in red is a cost. Anything marked in green, you receive, for instance, is you know, a really simple convention that they've employed.
Yeah.
So I think from that perspective, it's pretty successful. I'm not in love with it, but I liked it more than I thought I would.
Let's stop talking about other people's games and talk about yours. What's coming up next for Ian O'Toole? You've got a queue of projects you're working on?
Yeah, I do. I've a few sort of hovering around completion at the moment. Well, one of which you mentioned is Nemo's War.
Mm.
Lisboa is the next big one.
Okay.
And you should be seeing some previews fairly shortly.
Ooh.
Other than that, I have a couple of games that aren't actually announced yet, so I don't know what I can say about them.
Give us a hint.
I have a game for Queen Games coming up.
What about thematically? Could you give us any hints on that?
Well, I have one game that is set in 1950s America and is very much sort of that Americana nostalgic feel to it.
Okay.
Sort of lifestyle Mad Men type illustrations from that era. So
yeah,
that's
cool.
That's been fun to do. I have a very small game from Pandasaurus, which is quite nice.
Nice.
I don't know if I can tell you much about that.
Okay.
That's about it for the moment. I have a couple of things I've been working on for quite a long time, which are going to be Kickstarter games. One of which is called Victoriana, has actually been to Kickstarter and is returning to Kickstarter fairly soon.
Okay, so wasn't quite ready to launch to begin with, and got a bit of a once over and
pretty much. They've just gone back to try and, you know, get some reviews going and raise awareness and all that sort of thing.
Well, it sounds like you got more than enough to keep yourself busy, Ian. Do you have a dream project though? I mean, you seem to have this fantasy bent to your artwork. I mean, is there like an epic fantasy game that you kind of have tucked away in a shelf or something? I mean, something you might like to design yourself, maybe?
No, I don't. I can't see myself having the time to actually design a game anytime soon.
Huh.
As regards things to work on, I mean, yeah, sure, that there's, you know, ancient Rome is something I'd love to work with. Also, World War One is a big area of interest for me, so I'd love to do a project based on that.
Oh, it's such a compelling era, isn't it?
Yes, evocative.
Yeah,
and I know you're fans of The Grizzled, which is one of my absolutely favorite games from the last few years.
Diabolically difficult.
Yes, it is. Yeah, as it should be.
Yeah, that's the point. That's the point.
Yeah, indeed.
All right. Well, look, Ian, it's been marvelous to have a little chat to you, and congratulations in general, mate. I mean, anyone who can turn their hobby into a career the way you are and kick goals with it internationally from here in Australia. Hats off to you, sir. Well done.
Thank you very much.
Good to talk to you.
Yeah, you too, Trent.
Fantastic. Well, that was Trent talking to Ian O'Toole, who has been a part of a lot of games that the Dice Men have been a fan of, particularly The Gallerist, which is one of the games I love, but I'm really bad at. So I'm going to just sit back, listen to a song, commiserate, and then we'll come back and talk about something a little bit stranger.
Clarence Clarity, Bucktooth Particle Smashers. It's the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. Trent, Mark and Garth. Oh my God, have you been watching Stranger Things?
Yes.
On Netflix?
Yes.
You haven't?
No.
You haven't watched it?
Well, you mentioned it and I went and had a quick look. I watched 5 minutes maybe of the first
episode. It's only 8 episodes, right?
No, well look, I've
he's too busy playing Pathfinder Adventure Card Game solo.
I've actually fallen in love with Suits. My son had watched it all and sort of had seen glimpses of it. So now I had to go back to the start and start all over again. It's 5 seasons.
Do you want me to tell you how it ends?
No.
My other half just finished Suits about a week and a half ago. So. No.
Have you finished watching Stranger Things?
Yes, last night. Yeah. Finished episode 8. Oh, my God. I powered through this whole 8 series. It was fantastic.
And maybe the ending didn't quite live up to expectations, but the journey's great. And yes. If you're not familiar with Stranger Things, it's on Netflix. This show is a weaponized audiovisual drug tailor-made to stimulate the reward centers of your average Gen X member. Like, I mean, guys, it's our
really?
Show.
It really? Is.
Okay.
No wonder Trent is talking about this show with a grin from ear to ear, because the opening scene to this show is 4 kids sitting around a table at the end of a 10-hour D&D campaign.
That's right. Yeah, look, it's
I didn't see that one.
It's nerdy kids on bikes. They're hunting monsters. It's a coming-of-age story where they're facing the supernatural. So you got elements of Super 8, to name a film that was made this century. Goonies, Stand By Me.
E.T.
Poltergeist, a lot of John Carpenter references in it as well. And, the framing device for the whole series is this D&D campaign at the start, and it comes back in at the end, and the monster gets named for a D&D monster as well. And it's not even done ironically or for comedy reasons. Yeah. It's just straight up, these kids are playing D&D, they're having an awesome time, and they take the lessons from D&D and apply it to the adventure they're having in quote-unquote reality, right?
Okay.
So lessons like, don't split the party, right? Don't hesitate to unleash the fireball on the monster as soon as you see it. And to a lesser extent, don't fire range weapons into melee combat. and the D&D scene itself, and we've talked about this before on the show, or at least I have, the D&D scene is a straight lift from E.T.
Yep. Okay. Sure is.
And do you remember the older brothers? Elliot's older brother was playing D&D when E.T. was out in the woodshed, right? Mm. And I was 10 when I saw that, and that scene started me on this path that's brought me here tonight talking to you. And it wasn't even so much the film as much as it was the book of the film.
Really?
Because in the 80s, pre-internet, that was how you marketed a film. You got some loser writer to do an adaptation of it.
I reckon I read, it wasn't called A New Hope then, it was just called Star Wars.
Exactly, yeah.
I read that book. It basically fell apart from the middle because I read it. I would have read it 20 times, I reckon.
And that was Alan Dean Foster, who also did Splinter of a Mind's Eye.
That one also fell apart on me.
And I mean, look, we could talk about that till the cows come. I mean, he did the Alien adaptation, all sorts of things. The guy who did E.T., he never did much else. William Kotzwinkle was his name. Look, I read this book at 10, 11 years of age from cover to cover a bunch of times.
Yeah.
William Kotzwinkle's name came up again just a couple of years ago in my house. He's written some kids' books.
Oh, really?
Okay, which I read to my daughter, and she loved them. It's a 5-part series called Walter the Farting Dog.
I know, I've read Walter.
You know Walter the Farting Dog?
I didn't realize the connection with the author.
Walter the farting dog is hilarious.
So as a direct result of this guy writing this book and writing the D&D scene in there, my mum bought me the red box.
Wow, there you go.
With basic D&D in it, the starter set. And it was years before I even understood it, but I just liked reading the rules and I liked imagining the collaborative...
The one day I'd have some friends and we could play a game together.
That's it.
Sadly, it never happened, did it?
I'll tell you what's missing in Stranger Things, though, that doesn't quite make it historically accurate. I mean, for starters, the kids are cool in it. Well,
No, they're not.
Yeah, I was going to say, the first scene that I saw is them being bullied at school.
Yeah, true. But Trent's point of reference is a lot different to our point of reference, I guess.
The thing that's missing is the satanic panic.
Around
D&D that was in the 80s, where... look, I think it was some American evangelical church and consequently, you know, Australian groups as well, assumed that D&D's subject matter would lead to witchcraft and recruitment into cults and that kind of thing. It wasn't helped in Tasmania because there was actually a high-profile murder in the 80s?
Yeah.
In the 80s or 90s?
Yeah, I think it was like... mid to late 80s.
Yeah, so it involved some cross-dressing and a D&D group, and I don't know all the details, but it was, it was horrible, horrible stuff. I'm not fully across all the details of that. But look, my point is that D&D, like Pokemon Go, like the Walkman, like stretch jeans, and like the printing press, is... was a new kind of entertainment, a new kind of technology even, that people didn't understand, and it frightened them.
Yes.
Yep. And they thought it was going to change the world as they knew it at the time, and so they reacted badly against it. But now, 30, 40 years later, D&D continues to be a strong brand, and it's even presented on this show as wholesome, good fun. Mm. All right, and I do think that's a nice turnaround.
Yeah.
And just a great intro to a great series.
Well, like Pokemon Go, which gets you out and gets you walking, which is fantastic.
Go on.
Well, I was just going to say, as a relative newcomer to the whole RPG scene, I've only done a handful of RPGs over the last couple of years.
Well, you've jumped right in the deep end because you're playing a massive Call of Cthulhu campaign. Look,
I really loved the fact that this whole series could virtually be a D&D campaign. You could see the writers... basically almost making decisions based on a roll of a D20 to see where the series goes. And I really like that. But the second thing that I really liked about this, and this, to be honest, hit home harder than I was expecting it to, is that in the Call of Cthulhu campaign that we're playing, we are normal investigators who have absolutely no strength, no power, apart from the fact that we're a little bit aware of something going on. But a show like Stranger Things brought home to me the power of the sanity checks. Because Stranger Things goes into the sanity side of things for this really effectively, I think. And I think for you as the keeper in our Call of Cthulhu campaign, you were at pains to explain how scared and how insidious this sanity kind of thing is when you're dealing with these incredibly bad and big and nasty monsters. And to have it there on your TV screen was fantastic. I loved that element of it because sometimes just imagining it isn't enough. I like to see it visual there, and it was a great representation.
Now, speaking of the visual element of this, so one of the things I was a little bit concerned about, and I guess why I haven't jumped in, is because I've been spending a little bit of time with my younger son, who's 15, watching some TV shows, and he's a young 15, so it's that difficult time where you don't want too much violence, too much sex, and it's sort of that, you know, some M films are okay.
I couldn't get enough sex and violence when I was 15, let me tell you.
Yeah, well, you know, you're not my son, at least I don't think so, Trent, but anyway.
We're waiting for the results.
I saw, though, on Netflix, and this is the thing that confused me. It was rated adult.
Oh, yeah,
That, to me, is a confusion. Because I'd seen some other things rated adult, and one of them I thought was like an R-rated thing. So, but it it's not an R-rated
thing, is it? No, it's got some genuinely scary moments, and there's some adult themes. There's because it's a coming of age story, so there's a very good female character in it who does go through the loss of her virginity, but it's done really, really it's done well, and there's nothing gratuitous about it.
No, normally, I guess Super 8 is a pretty good example, the Harry Potter books maybe more than the Harry Potter films. I mean, J.K. Rowling wrote those books for her son, and Harry was the same age as her son. So as her son got older, and as Harry got older, there was more, the violence was more graphic, there was a bit more scary stuff in there.
Yeah.
But often with books and films like this, you imagine that someone who's the same age as the protagonist should be able to watch it. And when I saw young kids in the film, I was immediately thinking, oh my God, this is going to have young kids around the world watching this incredibly adult thing. But it was more the rating that threw me, because obviously I haven't seen it.
No, look, I think the fact that you've got 4 or 5 lead protagonists who are 11, 12, 13 in this show, it has done really, really tastefully. And Trent's right, there are a couple of jump scares, but it's completely age appropriate for teenagers, in my opinion, because there's no, as you said, there's no gratuitous sex, there's no gratuitous violence. It's a bit dark and a bit scary, but you're dealing with the occult and the supernatural sort of thing. So I think that's appropriate from a story point of view. I just love the fact that we're seeing D&D on the big screen.
And hopefully my son can pass the sanity check.
and
some luck, mate.
But you know what this means? Because if D&D is now presented as a wholesome form of...
As cool.
As hokey entertainment on this TV show in 20 years' time, the Pokemon Go revival.
I'm looking forward to
it's,
it.
It's going to happen. And what that means is that, listen, if you're listening to this and you're young, okay, and people are telling you that the stuff that you're into, the things you like, is a stupid and a waste of time, just don't listen to them, all right? Because even if it is Pokemon Go, God help us, that's legitimate. It's a legitimate way for you to spend your time. It's a legitimate thing for you to be into, and it's something that's going to form, inform your personality for the rest of your life.
Exactly, but it also creates friendship and bond. I mean, I work in a team of 5 people, all of which are mid 20s to late 30s, 4 out of the 5 of us are playing Pokemon Go.
Hey, Morgan Freeman's playing it now. Did you see that, YouTube? Check out the YouTube video, man. And check out Stranger Things on Netflix. We haven't gotten any kickbacks for mentioning this, but that's not to say we wouldn't like something. And speaking of kickbacks, we're going to give you some with a competition on The Dice Man Cometh, and we'll tell you all about how you can win that next. It's Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
Tobias Gesso Jr. with The Weight there. You're with The Dice Man Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3. Now, Mark.
Garth.
Would you like to drop some hints about a competition we have coming up?
I'll do more than that, Garth. I am going to tell you why you want to be in on this competition. Now, we haven't done a competition for a little while. And when we do, usually we're giving away games. Now, obviously, when we're giving away games, there's a chance you might not like the games you get. You might think, I don't want the Dice Man second-hand games. What we're giving away this time is better than games because it's money to buy games, and you can buy whatever you like. What we're giving away...
It's almost like a voucher.
It is. In fact, it's 2 vouchers.
What? It's better than a voucher.
2 $50 vouchers from our good friends, Polymorph Games, an online gaming store based right here in Tasmania. Thanks so much to Neil and the team from Polymorph. We will be giving away 2 $50 vouchers, as well as that. Everyone who enters will get a special promo code to give them a discount on aforementioned Polymorph Games website. Now, what we're going to be doing is, starting next week, for 3 weeks, we will give you the name of a game. We'll tell you the game you have to take note of.
A secret game.
That's right. And at the end of the 3 weeks, you have to email us, dicemencometh@gmail.com, and we'll say that a few times during this competition, I'm sure. You have to email us the 3 games or something tricky that we make up about the 3 games. You'll get an entry. We will give bonus entries for iTunes reviews. Not that we want to encourage people, but hey, iTunes reviews are always nice.
I would like to encourage people to do iTunes reviews.
Yeah, but get those three, the names of three games, and we'll remind you how it works again next week. So it'll run over the next 3 weeks, then we'll announce the winners. $250 vouchers for Polymorph Games. How awesome is that?
It's great. I love giving away free stuff. Can I enter?
No.
Ah, damn. So that means that someone else can win the opportunity, which is fantastic. But look, big thanks to Neil and Polymorph Games. They have a massive, massive online collection of games. So what I also like about it is you reach a nice little tier. You get some free shipping in there, which makes it all that more special. But I also want to shout out again, we are continually getting more and more Instagram and Facebook likes. So thank you to everyone who is doing that. But yes, I would like to encourage people to get on there and do some iTunes reviews, because that's their way of showing us that we love them and they love us and they want bonus entries and keeping everyone happy. So that's all I've got to say about that.
I almost forgot to mention, I won the Imperial Assault campaign.
Single-handedly.
I single-handedly won the Imperial Assault campaign that we've been playing for weeks.
Yeah.
It came down to one dice roll, and it was my dice roll, and I won it.
And that failed the first dice roll, so you had to use a skill to roll again.
That's a power that I legitimately earned throughout the process of playing the game, and I won that game, and that makes me cool.
Yeah, it does, because
in a Stranger Things kind of way.
Yeah, well, no. The funny thing is, it all came down to the last campaign, and if we lost the last campaign, didn't matter how many games we won up to that point, we would have lost the whole thing.
Wow.
According to the Fantasy Flight rulebook. We'll catch you next week. It's the Dice Man Cometh, Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We're out of here. Catch
Bye.
You
later.
This has been an edit of the Dice Man Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.